Welcome to the current federal tax developments for the week of January the 15th, 2018. Current federal tax developments is brought to you by the Los Gallos Institute, a Kaplan company, and your state society of CPAs. This week, we're going to take a look at a number of developments that have taken place here in the area of federal taxes. That includes developments that have occurred due to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and some of the things happening because of that. First up, though, we're going to talk about something that we talked about long ago, and that is that the Supreme Court was whether it was going to hear South Dakota's challenge to the Quill case on nexus for sales taxes. We had the state of South Dakota petition the court to hear their appeal in October. This week on Friday, we discovered that the Supreme Court was actually going to hear the case. They granted cert in the case. So the case will be heard this year. The state of South Dakota had passed a law that is directly contrary to the physical nexus rule of the Quill case. If you remember the Quill case from 26 years ago, the state of North Dakota had attempted to require Quill, a seller of office supplies, to collect sales taxes because they sold into the state of North Dakota. But Quill said, wait, we have no physical presence there. We have no, warehouses, we don't have employees, we don't actually do anything there. All we do is mail catalogs into the state of North Dakota, and individuals in North Dakota and businesses in North Dakota then buy product from us. So North Dakota, you shouldn't have any right to force us to collect your sales tax for you. The Supreme Court back then agreed with Quill in 1992 and said, nope, you don't have to collect the sales tax. But the way the opinion was written was interesting. They got rid of any complaint that having Quill collect this would somehow violate the Equal Protection Clause. Rather, they made this a Dormant Commerce Clause case. And that's interesting because they also suggested that realistically Congress should take care of this, and that would be something Congress would do. And then secondly, they said also mainly we're letting it keep going like we did back in the old Bill Haas case. Simply because it's still a bit too complicated, but technology is getting better, things are getting better. That might not be true long term. State of South Dakota believes it's been 26 years. Congress has done nothing in those 26 years to solve the problem. We've had proposals come up multiple times. We even in 2013 had a bill pass the Senate that would have allowed for remote collection, but Congress has effectively punted this. Now, the reason Congress punts? Obvious reason, most individuals, most voters would consider this a tax increase if Congress passed it. That is, they are currently not paying sales tax on sales for things they are buying that are being shipped from out of state. And they would believe that even though we all know they are supposed to be paying use tax on those payments, on those purchases, they're not really doing it. So they would consider that to be a tax increase if suddenly sales taxes started showing up on every shipment, and they would note that Congress had been the one that had set the system up. Therefore, they would blame Congress. So not surprisingly, Congress didn't rush to fix the problem. Well, the state of South Dakota finally got tired of this, and actually they were encouraged by a decision we've talked about before, which was the Brohl versus Direct Marketing Association case from Colorado, where in that case, Justice Kennedy, on an initial appeal to the Supreme Court, where dealing with a jurisdictional issue, had suggested Quill is dated law and probably should be overturned. And then secondly, now Justice Neil Gorsuch, who was then sitting judge at the 10th Circuit and one of the members of the panel that heard the case, also suggested that Quill seems unusual and doesn't make sense with how we normally adjudicate whether a state's actions are impinging on commerce, noting that normally we're worried about the fact that the state may give an advantage to in-state businesses. In this case, it's out-of-state businesses that are now having an advantage granted to them by the U.S. Supreme, by the federal courts, by the Constitution, by the way we've interpreted this. And there's been suggestion that maybe we should look at this again. And now it looks like that's going to happen. The South Dakota Supreme Court had ruled that, look, we can't overturn Quill. South Dakota passed a law that clearly violated Quill. South Dakota Supreme Court says, well, whether it's good law or bad law, the U.S. Supreme Court is the one that has to change this. And they basically threw the law out, which is what South Dakota wanted. This was all set up to get a case to the U.S. Supreme Court to hear this. The state took that decision to the court, and now they want to be heard. And we have now discovered they're going to be heard, right? The Supreme Court of the United States will hear the case. If the Supreme Court were to rule that Quill no longer applies and that the South Dakota law is acceptable, that could make a radical change in how we handle sales tax. We'll have to watch and see over the next few months if the mere possibility the Supreme Court could make such a ruling in a case like this might cause Congress to finally actually pass something rather than get us into the chaos of, you know, every state simply says, guys, whatever you sell, you have to collect sales tax when you sell into our state. Forget it. You know, the rules are gone. You've got any state you sell into, you'd have to collect. Or is Congress going to try to regulate that in some ways? The court, I suspect to a certain extent, the court reason they've taken this is, you know, we gave them 26 years and they haven't decided to do anything. So I guess we'll just need to create a crisis. So maybe they'll do something. In any event, keep your eyes on this because it's going to have a major impact on businesses and whether they need to be filing sales tax reports with a large number of states. Next up, now back to some Tax Cuts and Jobs Act implications. This deals with a Financial Accounting Standards Board meeting, which again, unusual. We don't usually cover those here, but FASB in this case has an impact. There's a tax issue in place. This is the FASB staff Q&A, whether private companies and not-for-profit entities can apply SAB 118. This was released on January 11th of 2018. This was released as in reaction to a January 10th meeting of the Financial Accounting Standards Boards, where they talked about a lot of issues related to deferred taxes. The one that's got the most impact, I think, on most people listening to this podcast is going to be this one about private companies and the basically Staff Accounting Bulletin 118. By the way, the staff we're talking about in Staff Accounting Bulletin is the staff of the SEC. The SEC, as we discussed a little while back, issued Staff Accounting Bulletin 118 to deal with Tax Cuts and Jobs Act deferred tax problems. The deferred tax adjustments need to be reported on financial statements for the period in which the enactment took place. That was enacted December 22nd, which makes it really troublesome date because a whole bunch of companies are going to have to be putting together their year-end financial statements for December 31st, 2017. And per what we have currently on the accounting standards, they would need to totally adjust their deferred tax items in order to go into that December 31st statement. Now, for some companies, this will be easy. If we're just going from 37% to 21%, and that's the, or not 37, say 35%, 31%, that's a relatively simple adjustment. But if you have other issues impacted by this, you know, if we may be impacted by the interest rules, that could conceivably implicate how quickly certain things could reverse. We may be implicated by other rules. We may have foreign operations, and we're going to have to worry about, you know, that bringing those tax assets back on shore and going away from our prior system where we're worried about bringing them on shore, you know, whenever we would onshore them, but taking them in at rates that were higher. Now, though, we're going to be forced to bring them in over at max 8 years. And lots of things are involved. We have a minimum tax. We have a couple of minimum taxes that are meant to ensure that the people can't game the territorial system. And so they pay at least a minimal amount of tax, especially on offshore intangibles. So for various reasons, it may be very difficult to properly compute your deferred tax. So the SEC allowed for a partial implementation. If you can tie down as much as you can reasonably estimate, you make those adjustments to deferred taxes. If there are some issues that cannot be reasonably estimated, then you effectively disclose the fact that we're not adjusting these areas yet. And when you do finally get the information to be able to make those adjustments, you pick them up as we go forward in future financials. The SEC expects you to be able to handle all of this within a year. That gave public companies the right to do it. But of course, private companies generally are not, you know, covered by SEC staff accounting bulletins. Well, the Financial Accounting Standards Board this week decided that guidance would be issued in the form of a staff Q&A. That would allow private companies, if they wish, to apply SAB 118. But if you do so, you must apply it fully. That means all the required disclosures you're going to find in SAB 118 also must be made by a private company if you're going to be going down that route. The Financial Accounting Standards Board also dealt with some other issues. There were some questions about whether we would discount those offshore earnings and profits tax. Would we discount that over 8 years? The answer is no. What about the minimum tax credit refunds? If we're going to get those over a number of years, we discount that. They also said no on that. They also dealt with a couple of other tax issues. And finally, they're going to issue an exposure draft that deals primarily if you have items that are stranded tax benefits in other comprehensive income, in accumulated other comprehensive income, that we're going to be able to move those directly to retained earnings. But that requires a change, which is going to be an exposure draft that's going to go out on a very, very short comment period, 15 days, because they're trying to get this thing passed and enacted before you would have to take on, before basically the financials are going to be issued for December 31st. Things are happening in the accounting side of the equation because of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Next, we'll go to an annual event. The Joint Committee on Taxation has issued its list of expiring federal tax provisions, 2016 to 2027. That is document JCX-1-18, issued on January the 9th. Every year, the Joint Committee on Taxation lists out provisions of the Internal Revenue Code that have expired in the prior year or that will expire in future years. The Joint Committee on Taxation, this time we cover 2016 to 2027. There are a number of provisions that expired at the end of 16, many of them energy related, but not all. And there is a question whether those will be extended to apply to 2017, 18, 19. A couple of ones besides the energy ones that are in there would be a deduction for the home mortgage insurance. Remember that insurance that you got for mortgage insurance when you went out, you borrowed and you were, weren't putting enough down, you paid the mortgage insurance. Remember, we got that if we took our mortgage out after a certain date. Well, that expired at the end of 16. And so that wouldn't apply for 17. Neither would the rules on cancellation of debt. If it's a debt that was secured by your home, we had a special exclusion for that under 108 that also died at the end of 16. Either one of those could be extended, along with a bunch of the energy ones could be extended. If you go to this list, you'll find all those 16 items. The extender bill, an extender bill was introduced by Senator Hatch in December. However, Congress has not yet taken it up. It's expected that once they get the government funded, they may decide to take up the bill. We'll just have to keep our eye on that. But that's one of those little messes that's going forward. We also have a number of items on this list now that were added by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Because remember, we set up a bunch of especially individual provisions that have expiration dates in the future. But additionally, individual provisions, we also have things like bonus depreciation that are now going to expire, but further out in the future. So this publication is always a useful item just to remind you which things are going to go away eventually that are in the tax law. So which things we need to plan to use them up if we really want to make sure we can use them before they disappear from the law. Next up, a field attorney advice. This one deals with field attorney advice 2018-0101F, issued on January the 6th. And this is a case of the IRS looking at a fuel rewards program. And you may remember, going back to the Giant Eagle case, that we've been down this path before. You go to the grocery store, you give them your card, they give you points. These points give you some benefits. In the case of Giant Eagle, it gave you discounts as you bought more gasoline from Giant Eagle in the future. Well, this case, the IRS is looking at a little bit different fuel rewards program. And the question was, again, can the taxpayer deduct rewards that customers have earned but had not redeemed by the end of the year? In this case, unlike the Giant Eagle program, where Giant Eagle, you got a discount on fuel you bought, but you had to go buy more fuel to get a discount. In this case, the customer just gets free gas. They put their fuel card in the pump. Maybe they've now earned, the equivalent of 2 gallons of gas. They will give them 2 gallons of gas free. So they just get free gas. It's not contingent on them buying gas. Obviously, you know, a 20 cent per gallon discount at the pump is only good if you actually buy gas. But in this case, it was just free gas. No additional purchase was required. Well, the field attorney advice determined that this is different. Remember, Giant Eagle, yes, they won, but the IRS has not acquiesced in that case. So outside the Third Circuit, the IRS will fight you if you have Giant Eagle facts. But the IRS ruled that these are not Giant Eagle facts. They found that this was like something, and I love it, went to the old regulation on trading stamps. Now, some of you listening to this are too young to remember trading stamps. But when I was growing up, it was, you know, grocery stores gave S&H green stamps. Actually, I think they stayed around and kept going in various forms for quite a while. But basically, and I think there's still technically, there still technically is a company out there somewhere that's planning to reset itself up to do S&H greens, to do S&H green stamps, something of the sort, not really green stamps. But the idea was you got these stamps, you put these stamps in a book. When you filled up so many books, you could go to the S&H green stamp store and redeem those books for various items. You know, you might redeem them for a radio. You might even get a whole bunch of books in those days because televisions were expensive. You'd get a television, you know, color TV, whatever you did, but you accumulated these books, these green stamp books. And the IRS issued a regulation back then, Regulation 1.451-4A1, which stated that the grocer essentially got a deduction for the cost of those stamps, even though they weren't yet redeemed. But it had to be a direct trade for product. It had to be the customer didn't have to do anything else. All they had to do was take their, you know, once they got enough stamps, they took them in and got redeemed. Obviously, these days, we're not collecting little green stamps. But what we are doing is going and putting on our cards all these reward programs. IRS said, well, those reward programs are really just like the old green stamps. And so because of that, this old trading stamp regulation applies in this case. And because it applies in this case, another grocery store, this grocery store could claim a current deduction, even though nobody had gone out yet and actually got the free fuel. And this free fuel was gotten from third parties, you know, other from gas stations, because this grocery store apparently didn't sell gas. So they hadn't been charged for it yet, but they still could take the deduction. A little different. And by the way, an interesting case. So depending upon your award program, if you want to get the benefit, this shows you one way. If you don't want to get into a Giant Eagle fight because you're not in the right circuit, you could structure a program this way. And apparently you're fine if you do it that way. Another Tax Court and Jobs Act issue that came out late this week. Notice 1036. This is an IRS publication, actually, even though it's called a notice. Early release copies of the 2018 percentage method tables for income tax withholdings. These were issued on Thursday the 11th. The IRS has released tables to allow you to compute payroll tax withholdings after taking into account the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act changes. These are the tables the IRS had promised us. Obviously, they don't have all of these stuff to go into Publication 15 yet, but they have this. And this, since most computer systems, of course, use the percentage method of computing withholding, they don't just go look them up in little tables that people used years ago when they're manually doing payroll, for the most part. These tables are really what you're looking for. The IRS says that employers should adopt these as soon as practical, but in no event can you not get them adopted before February 15th. So you have a month to get your systems up to speed to take these in. That shouldn't be that difficult because just like we did before, we're using withholding allowances. By the way, I know we call them exemptions, and most people call them how many exemptions are you claiming, but technically they're referred to as withholding allowances. So the fact we no longer have exemptions allowed, at least through 2025, doesn't matter. They're just the allowances. These allowances adjust how much tax you'll have withheld from this absolute top gross number, you know, and how we're going to do it. Now, one problem we're going to get, because now these new tables are going to go into effect, and a lot of payroll departments will tell employees, we suggest you review your W-4 to make sure it's correct under the new law. Expect to get a lot of phone calls from clients and the related parties asking you to help them compute the W-4. Ought to be fun. You may want to take a look at these withholding tables. You may want to start getting used to computing what their paychecks will look like, because you're going to have to back into what their withholding would be to get the proper amount if you project up their taxes. Yeah, I know that's going to be a pain for most of us because those phone calls are not really fun to work with. It's like, this is the most tedious, boring work I can think of. But remember, your clients generally consider this to be something really, really important. And so, like it or not, you need to get into and take a look at these tables. If you work with businesses, and especially if you work in a payroll department, obviously you need to get these tables into your system and start using them as quickly as possible. Well, still got issues coming up. You know, the Tax Cut and Jobs Act is still something we're all adapting to. And as I mentioned before, we are going to be doing some presentations on this. On January 19th, which is this coming Friday, so we're running out of time here, Smart Pros, I'll be doing a webcast for Smart Pros at their site. You can go on. It'll be at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific time. You can sign up for them through Smart Pros website. You go to www.smartpros.com. It should be linked to on the front page where you can find the link for this update. Also, a number of state societies are participating, and if you want, and you should probably check there, because if your state society is participating, there'll be a discount code. Always good to get a discount. So you want to go ahead and make sure you use that. But again, that'll be this Friday. It's a two-hour presentation, so you know we're not going to be able to do a super deep dive on every topic, but we will try to hit every topic. It's a repeat of, it's basically going to cover the same materials, although updated, obviously, what's happened since then, that we covered back in the broadcast we did before the end of the year for Smart Pro, same issue. So we'll be looking at that. It will be live. This is not a replay, a taped replay of a prior session. This is a live session. So it's live, meaning that if anything happens up through the time we broadcast, we'll be able to incorporate that into it. We're also doing a session. I'm doing one for the Arizona State Society of CPAs. I would have said you could come down and watch it, but it turns out now we're sold out. So there are no live seats available. You cannot go to the society office at this point and sign up for it, at least unless somebody cancels. So, you know, I guess you could try to get on a waiting list for that if you desperately want to go down there and see it in person. But we still have plenty available for you to webcast. I mean, webcasting, we should be able to accept everybody that wants to come. That'll be at 12:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Okay, so it's an afternoon session, 4 hours on the law. So twice as long as the other webinar. But it's going to be going on. We'll be talking about that. It is a live session from the Arizona Society offices. Therefore, you know, it'll be traditional live broadcast, that whole thing. You know, if you're interested, you can sign up there and watch that. And again, we'll be going over the new tax law. And for all of you all around the country, please check out the CP your state society may be offering. A number of state societies are offering programs these days on the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So you want to make sure and see what's available there. You know, take a look what's going on. Enjoying this wondrous new year that we're trying to get into now with our new tax bill. This has been the Current Federal Tax Developments here for the week of January the 15th, 2018. As always, you can follow our updates during the week if you go onto our website at currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. You also find there, if you go to the weekly update portion, weekly video, audio and video updates, I will have posted there a PDF. We get all of this up that will have information about all the items we discussed this week. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them to me, edzollers@currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. I am available. You can follow me on Twitter. My address there at edzollers. And like I said, I tend to follow the discussions on the Tax Pros group on Reddit. So if you want to go to Reddit, you know, reddit.com/r/taxpros. Join us there. If you have a question, you can post it there. And you know, I'll try to get back and answer anything somebody posts if they want to there. I also will follow up what else goes on that website. We expect lots more developments this year because Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is going to require a lot of guidance, a lot of issues. So be sure to join us next week. We'll take a look at what's happened since then, plus other developments. And you know, we'll keep our eye as this year goes on and what the Supreme Court does with the Quill case. This ought to be one interesting year. I look forward to seeing you all next week here on Current Federal Tax Developments.